This is the Muscles and Management Podcast, where we build your body and your business. Talking all things training, sports performance, and business for athletes and aspiring coaches to enhance your training and better your career. Muscles and Management is brought to you by Challenger Strength with your host, Jerry DeFilippo.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 30 of the Muscles and Management Podcast. As usual, your favorite meathead, Jerry DeFilippo here. Before I get started, as I always do, shamelessly begging for ratings, reviews, and subscribe if possible. Officially pulling 500 downloads per episode. I just checked that out today. The recent like 7 or 8 weeks, and then the last couple that are going to project to get there as well over the course of the first month. In the podcast world, that's usually the time frame for figuring out average downloads per episode. So. The fact that we're over 500 now consistently is pretty freaking amazing, considering that this is only the 30th episode, and this is just all organic based off my following on Twitter, so that's awesome. Next goal for sure is 750. We'll get there little by little, and we're going to do that with, some quality content. So if you're enjoying it, a rating, a review goes a long way, or just sharing it, commenting on a tweet, or just something, sharing it with a friend is huge, so... thanks for the support already. And if I'm helping you in any way, just, let people know, let me know for sure. It's the DMs are awesome. And let's keep on rolling, hard to have a lot of downloads on an episode without some awesome guests, getting some great feedback from the previous week's episode, episode 29 with Erica Suter, just discussed a lot of awesome and great practical things in terms of youth training, strength and speed training in general, a lot of business stuff actually to tail end, creating a culture with your business and your training, with your athletes and social media in terms of building a presence on there. So she was great. That episode's blowing up. Check that out if you haven't already. Same thing with episode 28 with Brian Scanlon, this time of year with recruiting, especially in baseball, kicking into full force. He gives you guys a lot of nuggets and a lot of valuable takeaways, whether you're a parent or athlete or even a coach on the other side of things for recruiting. Check that out if you haven't already. And then episode 27, the most recent episode I've had with a pro athlete, Eric O'Flaherty, former left-handed pitcher, reliever, in the bigs, spent a bulk of his time and made his name with the Atlanta Braves. Fantastic career. He was a delight to have on, just some great, awesome stories, some laughs, but some also, some great practical info, on training, sports performance in general, a lot of baseball stuff, obviously. So check that out. And then episode 26, which is, had a good week this week in terms of interaction, was a solo shot with me, just talking about how you can improve your conditioning without conditioning when it comes to using strength and speed training. So check those out. Before we get started, a couple more things. Shout out, commitment, two commitment shout outs, or three actually. Two current athletes of mine, Andrew McDermott, just committed to Quinnipiac to play baseball. Congrats to him. Young man that I've known since he was 8 years old. I'm best friends with his older cousin. So I've known him even before I trained him, and I've also had the pleasure of working with him in the past 2+ years. And just really seeing him grow, going from a, 6'9", 7'0", 60 guy to now a 6'5", 6", the work he's put in, the front squat improvement, his vertical jump, moving from mid-20s to the lower 30s, just an overall awesome job by him, with the diligence of the work that he's put in. Shout out to him. Shout out, Ray Ortiz, another guy. He actually is travel ball teammates with Andrew for Wataka Baseball in Northern New Jersey. Also shout out to them. Great program that puts a lot of guys to the college level and just does an awesome job with how they develop their guys. Almost as well as my guys at over at Untamed Baseball for Gamers Baseball Academy. Wink, wink. Shameless plug to my boys over there. But anyway, Ray Ortiz committing to Georgetown. Shout out to Ray, another guy that I've been working with for, over 2 years. Just really, really good athlete, and you could see from the beginning, like, he was going to go somewhere no matter who he worked with, but I'm just happy that I've been able to help him in some regard and, get close the gap for him. He was a very fundamentally sound, like, really good ball player, mechanics, everything was just really, really crisp and solid. He did some things with me just to add a little bit of strength, add a little bit of speed, get that 60 to a 7 or just below a 7. You know, and the rest was history. Awesome job by him. Shout out to Ray and shout out to Andrew. Cannot wait to start working with them again in the coming months, moving into another offseason, going into their senior year. And then shout out to a former athlete of mine. We've stayed in touch. We worked for the offseason of his sophomore year in high school, and just due to some travel constraints, we weren't able to keep continuing to work together. But he linked up with a great strength trainer, and I stayed in touch with him and his parents. Just awesome people. Zach Oswald, left-handed pitcher committing to George Washington. Just a fantastic kid. I can't say enough about him. It just speaks volumes that I've stayed in touch with him and he stayed in touch with me, even though we don't directly work together anymore. But we did have a great offseason together in the time that we did. You know, it just says a lot, the fact that he even, you know, shouted me out or you know, thanked me for his commitment, just, you know, even given the fact that we hadn't worked together this last year. Love that kid. So proud of him. Happy for his family. Happy for all these guys. They have great families, and that's just where it all starts with. So shout out to Andrew, Ray, and Zach. Congrats, guys. Love you, boys. Excited to see what the future holds for you. Keep working, because everything just started. It's not over now. Got to pick up. We got to keep on moving. So shout out, boys. Shout out to you guys. Couple things in terms of upcoming episodes, and I'm going to wrap this up, and let's go down to the Q&A. Upcoming episodes, we have the crew over at Baseball Health Professionals, Kyle Rogers, Stephen Oster, and Terry Phillips. Last but not least, Terry Phillips. Terry and Kyle are Muscles and Management alum. Great episodes with those guys. Check them out if you haven't already. But excited to have them on as a unit. Finally, we're trying to make that work with scheduling, so that's going to be happening in the next week or two. Finally, I just really can't wait to have them on. Three great minds just kind of chopping it up about baseball, sports performance, rehabilitation, strength training, speed training, you name it. We're going to talk about it. And we're also going to talk about what they're doing with Baseball Health Professionals, their new site that they launched, I want to say about 6 months ago, give or take. It has, you know, grown rapidly already in that short amount of time. No surprise, given the fact that they run it. They're very thorough guys. They're doing some great things for the baseball and sports performance and rehabilitation community, linking as many athletes and parents as possible to quality providers of, you know, strength training, sports performance, rehabilitation, doctors, surgeons, things of that nature, you know, around the country, around the world. You know, they're expanding through North America. It's just awesome stuff, and I'm excited to have them on to talk about that, amongst other things. And then Joseph Potts, as you may know, him as Top Speed LLC on Twitter, just a fantastic, you know, brilliant mind when it comes to strength and speed training. We've been going back and forth a little bit on Twitter about some stuff, and we're fans of what each other do. So I'm really happy to have him on, excited to get him on, just working out some logistics with scheduling. So just two awesome episodes coming your way in the near future. So look out for those. With that said, I have a little bit of dry mouth. I just feel like I rambled for 30 minutes and we didn't even get started yet. I guess to start things off, we're doing a Q&A, obviously, as I've been tweeting about all day and as I've already mentioned, but why a Q&A? So in my opinion, every so often, it's just great to, answer all the questions that I have in my DMs that I haven't had a chance to get to, or just generally open up the floor to some new questions. You know, it's hard for me to answer everything. Like, I really try my best. If you listen to the week, last week's episode with Erica, you'll kind of hear us talk about just getting to, you know, questions at some point, whether it's a week, a month, a year, just get to people at some point and try to give them as much as you can. Granted, it is free. So, you know, anything that we do in that sense is a bonus, but we also try our best, you know, aside from that. But we talked about the fact that it's good to answer things at some point, right? So I've had some questions in my DMs that I've wanted to answer. It's, you know, it's tough to get home after a day of training or working and just to hop right on and get to those right away. So this is a really great forum for me to address those questions and also, you know, get to some new questions that were sent to me this afternoon when I tweeted out, you know, the Q&A, you know, basis of this podcast. One thing I do want to say in that sense, you know, don't be afraid to comment questions on my Twitter or on the post. I noticed that people were more inclined to DM them to me. I would assume it's out of fear of like asking a stupid question, not wanting your question to be seen, whatever it is. Don't worry about that. There's no such thing as a dumb question. If you're looking to learn, just ask away and we're going to figure it out. And just the final piece of the why, the Q&A, I just like helping people, I guess. I like helping the athletes that come to me, to my facility. I like helping the athletes and people that you know, are online clients of mine, and I like helping people with some of the free content that I put out. I enjoy doing that, and it also, you know, another bonus, it expands my business and my reach. So couldn't be happier to do that. I guess at this point, I've said this to my head trainer today, Julian. I was like, I guess I'm the Robin Hood of meat, the Robin Hood of meat, Robin Hood, long day for me, forgive me. I'm the Robin Hood of meatheads at this point. Robin Hood kind of running around taking things from people and giving out to people to help. I guess I'm not taking anything from anyone, but, I do enjoy just kind of dispersing info and what I've learned and what I found to be, you know, successful or help me to other people. So, just doing my best, that I can to help people. You know, going forward, don't be afraid to ask questions. It may take me a while to answer and watch my DMs are going to get killed tonight or tomorrow when everyone listens to this. But it may take me a while to answer, but I will at some point. And as long as you don't ask me for a program or some content that I would probably charge for, like something that's super detailed, that's like not just a quick sentence or two or just, you know, guidance to an article that I've written or an episode or of a podcast or something, just don't be a D-I-C-K. I'm getting better at trying not to curse as much, as you can see by me spelling out D-I-C-K, but I can whip the explicit label on this episode, as I always tell you guys, so be on the lookout for that. But, you know, don't ask for crazy things or demand things. I hate the, hey, I need this or whatever. Not the right way to ask a question. Maybe try like a, could you help me? And I've been blessed and lucky enough to have people that are pretty good with that. But I'm just saying, if you don't get an answer, that's probably why. Also, be nice. If I help you, a rating and review doesn't kill anybody. It wouldn't kill me. It helped me a lot. So sauce me one of those. I'm going to take one of the vocab words I learned from the hockey community. Sauce me one of those. Sauce me a rating or review if I help you. I think just, you know, the least I could ask for if I did help you in some kind of way. So thank you. All right, we are moving on. So here's what I'm going to try to do. I have 8 questions lined up. I'm going to try to answer them in the next 45 or so minutes, because at the end of the day, it is a Tuesday evening, and I would like to shower and eat and have a life in a little bit. But I do want to answer these questions. These are 8 awesome questions, and I think they're going to be pretty helpful to whoever's listening and you know, whoever's out there that's a fan of the show. So with that said, I have some brief notes prepared. With outlines of the questions just for me to follow, but I also would like to read some of them directly from Twitter. So I'm actually clicking. This is why I'm kind of stuttering right now, because I'm kind of trying to focus on my Twitter. I'm going to go back to my Twitter. I'm going over to my DMs. Let's see here. All right. First question that I had. All right. So this question came from, and if the person has a name listed, I will say their name and also their at name, their handle, whatever the kids are calling it these days. But this guy just had a handle, so I'm going to just say what that is. CubbiesFan999. Shout out to you for the question. So, basically, this was just a direct quote. Hey, man, I know there's no quick or easy fix for speed, but I have tryouts for the top team in my area for baseball, and they have a time 60. I know there's no quick or easy fixes, but do you have any idea on how to improve my 60 relatively quickly? Is there anything I can do? So shout out to him, first of all, for just acknowledging that there's no quick or easy fixes. That just says a lot about him right off the bat. But you're right, there are no quick or easy fixes, but there are some things we can do in terms of some small things here or there that can clean up or trim some fat, so to speak, off the 60. So first things first. The absolute number one thing you can do to really improve your time right off the bat that doesn't require a lot of time is just improve some of the sloppiness that may exist in your mechanics. So instead of pointing out to the negatives, I want to work on, you know, highlighting some of the positives or things you should be focusing on in order to have a good start. First and foremost, and I've talked about this on Twitter ad nauseum, good push or extension off your back leg, right? Watch Ricky Henderson, Jose Canseco in his early days before he was, you know, juicing up with the needle and everything. You know, OG, but I have to say it. Watch the drive they got off their back leg, right? So if we're talking back, you know, in a baseball start and the right leg is your lead leg in your lead, the back leg would be your left leg, right? Those guys were so good at pushing off of that leg and kind of shifting their weight over their front leg and their front ankle into their drop step, and it creates a good natural drop step, that their body was in such a good acceleration position that their first stride had the most optimal positioning to, you know, propel them, whether it was towards second base, to finish a 60, whatever it is. So that is huge. Number two, huge thing that I see with a lot of kids that are running 60s, and I watch videos, and also in my own time as an athlete, that, you know, when I was playing back in the day, a lot of guys stand straight up out of the start. You want to get a good angle. Don't stand straight up. You know, don't be hunched over either. But look up the Trouts, the Byron Buxtons, the Billy Hamiltons, the Hendersons, those guys, and see the angle they're at. Like, their body is in line, their chest isn't hunched over, but they're on a nice angle. They're not standing straight up into the sky. First 10 or 15 yards, you should not be driving straight up into the air. You're going to lose a lot of momentum building ability into your start. In terms of some starts you can work on in the week or two before an event, if that's how much time you had. Lateral start. So obviously, you know, a regular traditional baseball start, right? A lateral half kneeling start. So imagine a baseball start where your front leg is down on your knee and your back leg is up. What did I say in the beginning? Good push off your backside. So if the only leg we have to push off is that back one, you're going to get really good at using it for extension and pushing off of it. So those are some great starts to work on. And above all else, and this doesn't even involve mechanics, just learn how to warm up. A lot of these showcases you go to, I don't say this to kind of demean anybody, just because it's just a fact that, like, a lot of people that run these showcases aren't strength coaches, aren't sports performance coaches, they're just baseball coaches, that they have eyewash warm-ups. They're not very good, and you're going to go through them just because that's what everyone does when they go there, but have a warm-up that you know, it's a go-to that you use in your training that you can rely on. I've posted some in the past. You can find that on my page somewhere. And this is a big thing, and I have this listed in all caps in the document. Don't static stretch right before you sprint. I see a lot of kids, they'll do a full warm-up, and they just mistime it, and I'll get to that. That's in my next point. But they just mistime their warm-up, and what ends up happening is that they warmed up, and then they wait 15 or 20 minutes to sprint, and they think it's then a good idea to stretch their hamstrings or quads or ankles or something of that nature, you know, in the 5 minutes before the sprint to, quote-unquote, stay loose. And you're just putting your muscles to sleep, so let's not do that, you know. And that brings us to my last point. Time your warm-up the right way. You know, get an idea of when you're running, what the schedule of the event is. These events have everything printed out. Now they have groups. They have listings. Who's doing what? Find out when you're running. And it's okay if you go over to the side and do your own warm-up. And don't ever let a camp or a showcase person tell you it's not, because you're spending your money on the event. And you have the right to do what's going to put you in the best position to succeed. So have your go-to warm-up. And finish that warm-up with some build-up sprints, 40, 60, 80% build-up to that sprint, focus on some of those mechanical things, and you should be good to go. Question number two. Let me go back to my DMs here. Excuse me. This is live, people, so I'm doing my best. All right. So I hope I don't butcher this last name. I'm going to try my best. Matt Bequirian. You know, his at name reads the same as his name on there, so Matt Bequirian. Thoughts on CrossFit for young kids and the typical buzzword we all hear these days, sport-specific training. Right off the bat, I'm going to say, and I've tweeted this in the past, am I huge on CrossFit? No, I really don't like it. But I'm going to tell you why first. To me, the idea of emphasizing the number of reps and the speed of those reps to get done in a certain amount of time with the compound movement is just an absolute recipe for disaster, especially for a youth athlete who should be, you know, prioritizing mechanics and just building strength. Okay, let's get that out of the way. I said that. However, I do think that a focus on movement patterns, and I do know CrossFit, you know, there's a lot of clean work, squats, you know, you're maybe benching a little bit. You're doing a lot of movement pattern, you know, oriented and stuff with origins in movement patterns. So that is very good for youth athletes. I will say, if you can find a way to modify, like if you want to really do CrossFit and you can find a way to, you know, lower some of the emphasis on the speed and getting reps done in a short amount of time, and that being the goal, and maybe just push for more focus on, you know, mechanics and quality of reps. I think you could get some good stuff done for sure. I think the biggest problem with it is that that doesn't happen. So I guess that's my answer to that in a sense. I would say that if you insist on starting with CrossFit, maybe after a year or two, try to start to transition to, you know, more of a strength sesh sports performance coach. And I only say that because in the first year or two of training, you're going to get a lot out of just movement pattern work for the, and don't get me wrong, like, even my advanced athletes still use movement patterns, but they're just done in a different way. you're not going to see a lot of CrossFit goers or CrossFit coaches having your guys do dynamic effort barbell lifting, velocity-based training, you know, working on sprints, plyometrics, the correct form, all that kind of stuff. It's just not what the culture is, as far as I know. So after a year or two, when you kind of like squeeze the orange that is CrossFit with as much juice out of it as possible, and it's kind of run dry, transition to more of that strength and speed coach, in my opinion, you know, climbing up the ladder more towards what your sport actually requires. Good segue. Sport specific. Does it exist in strength training? Simple enough, right? Sport specific is the sport only. We can try to, you know, do things to make our general training that we do, you know, closer to our sport, but sport specific itself is on the field, leave sport on the field. I've talked about this till I'm blue in the face, so I'm not going to bore you guys anymore, but that's my answer to that. Moving on, we're killing it, guys. I'm making some good pace right now. Two questions in 7 minutes. We are killing it. All right. Question three. Again, another guy. You guys are, I guess it's, you know, professional, so to speak, but no creativity here in terms of, you know, having some unique Twitter names. But Andrew Labrado. I hope I said that the right way. This was, I think, just an awesome question. Let's see when I answered this. I initially answered this, you know, 2 weeks ago, a week and a half ago. But I liked the answer that I gave him so much, and I felt that it was such a helpful answer that I wanted to, you know, ask the question on this podcast and then give my answer again. Let me stop rambling and actually ask the question. Hey man, I know this is a question you probably get asked a lot. I do. I'm a 26-year-old trainer working two jobs, at strength training. Strength and conditioning, is part-time right now. So shout out to you, dude. That's awesome that you're grinding like that. Do you have any advice on how at your age you've gotten to where you are? I know that's vague and a lot to answer. But right now where I'm at, I just feel stuck and I'm trying to do everything I can at my facility to improve my coaching and be able to do this full time. Appreciate it. If you have anything you could share and understand, if you really can't get back on this. Well, I am getting back to you, Andrew. Appreciate the question. And I want to just make a correction to myself. His at name is Andrew7466. I'm nothing if I'm not accurate. All right. So, Andrew, as I said, that's just an awesome question. And I really, really, as much as I wish that I had a direct blueprint for that, to answer that, and I had like a how-to guide or a, you know, getting your career or your business off the ground for dummies. I wish I did. I don't. But what I do have are some just, you know, general things that have helped me a lot. I really try not to come across as conceited when I say this, because it could be construed that way. But a lot of people say to me, like, hey, man, like, how have you gotten to where you are at such a young age? And I am fortunate to be, you know, where I have gotten to at the age of 25 and getting started and being able to make this a full-time gig for myself and make a good living off of it at, you know, the age of 23, 24, 25. But there is no blueprint. You know, everyone's going to have a different, you know, roll the dice or shake, and it's going to break a different way for you. But there are some things you can definitely do for sure, in my opinion. So, and this, Andrew has this part down for sure, but not a lot of people do. You have to be willing to put in the long hours, quote unquote, and I'm doing those air quotes that I alluded to last episode. You have to be willing to grind, but you also need to have a plan and goals. Like, this can't be what I call empty grinding, where you're literally just like working hard just to work hard because you feel like it's like good karma and you're going to end up with something good just because you did that. You got to actually like push towards something like concrete. And I'll give you an example. When I first started, and I used Instagram a lot more than Twitter. Now my Twitter got bigger and I used that, but I posted tons of, videos of me just like lifting by myself and demonstrating things and writing articles and putting videos up for those articles just to kind of give myself an identity in, you know, on social media and let people know that this was what I was doing and this is who I am and that I kind of had some knowledge and I was willing to share it. And I also trained some people for free. I worked with this hockey organization, the Jersey Hitmen, that I still work with. Shout out to them. And I didn't really get paid much, if anything at all. And I had some clients that I started with for free. And what that allowed me, though, it was a, you know, sample size of people to actually work with and get results with, so that I can kind of, one, get better as a coach and apply some of the things that I was learning. But The second part of that is that I actually had people to, you know, post about and show people what I was doing with them, right? Because, you know, as I talked about with Erica last week on last week's episode, you can post, you know, how-tos and variations to use and things like that so you're blue in the face. But people want to see some kind of, like, they want to identify with you, right? They want to see that other people are getting help, you know, with the stuff that you're doing and that you're actually working with other people and just not somebody that's just kind of, like, you know, posting a lot of different variations. That they want to see you actually helping people. So above all else, like, that's my first piece of advice is, like, work for free a little bit if you have to and get some people, get some bodies to work with, and you'd be really surprised where that can go. And as I said, like, keep learning, but, like, whatever you have to do to get some clients, to get experience and show people that you're good at what you do, like, that's so, so key. You know, and free content on that same token, free content and free clients can yield some traction right away. And I've seen that firsthand. And it can yield some money because, and that's like, let's, you know, be honest here. That's not the be all end all of everything, but we have to make a living. And part of his question was to be able to, you know, make this a full-time thing. So money is key in that sense. You know, having those free clients and the free content to show people that you know what you're doing can yield further business. And it has for me. And, you know, it's something I'd be lost without if I didn't have that, experience and do that. So, you know, just make sure that, you know, that is something you focus on. I really do think that that is just a gigantic key to this whole process. And the last but not least, build a social media, like have a place where you continuously and consistency is very key, post stuff and can, you know, make an identity and a niche for yourself and show people that, you know, who follow you, what you do and what you're good at, and post useful content. You know, things that are practical and of use. But as I said, it's important to, you know, have an identity and show actual people you work with and some stuff about yourself. Cause at the end of the day, people want to think that you're more than just a robot, right? So gigantic point there. Remember that. On to question four. This is probably the most demanding question in terms of the actual answer itself, but it's a great one. This comes from AJ Wilson. I'm not butcher this, but Son of God. Hold on. I just lost his name. Okay. Son of God 76. All right. So I'm going to paraphrase this because this was a long, long question and I paraphrased it already. So why not use the work that I did? Basically has a son that's a pitcher at the JUCO level, and just wants to know that he finished strength training, looking to start training for power. And you know, if lowering load to 40 to 60% for 48 weeks, do I think that he'd lose strength from not lifting heavy? Do I recommend doing both in the same phase as a la conjugate style? And those of you who know me, that's kind of my bread and butter. Or do I recommend 4 weeks of just power and maybe going back to strength training, you know, once the season starts? He's doing 85% of his one rep max for 8 currently. So he's currently lifting for like strength hypertrophy. So that's about that range. Also, should he train heavily through the fall season or train as if the fall season is the off season, or be peaked by then and ready to go? All right. So first thing I will say, and I hate to do this, I'm going to say it depends, but I'm going to explain why it depends, and I'm going to explain the best I can on my advice based on what I know. So obviously, a lot of this depends on his numbers, his squat, his vertical, etc. Like, is he using more force, more velocity? I've covered this in my force velocity profiling answers and episodes and everything. So it really depends on that. Once we know that, and if I knew that about his specific case, I'd have a way better answer on what he actually needs. I mean, if you're looking at a guy that like is literally ripping like 2.5 to 3 times his body weight, or even 2 times his body weight off the floor in a deadlift, or 2 times his body weight in a squat, like odds are they're pretty strong and they're strong enough, quote unquote, to, you know, be able to focus on some power for a while. And, you know, not only one, not, you know, lose strength or get hurt by that, but they're also going to be able to, you know, get a lot out of it. Cause like maybe it's not something that like they have focused on and been able to capitalize on. So I'll say that first. On top of that, you're probably not going to lose much max strength in only 4 to 8 weeks. But, this is again, the reason I love conjugate. I'd normally only I normally advise conjugate, programming base. And I guess just alter which one is more prominent. And what I mean by that is like what you, you know, are focusing more on strength or dynamic effort or power based on your goals and like where you are. Joe DeFranco, one of my, you know, virtual mentors, so to speak, says it the best. You know, think of it as like a plate at dinner. You know, you could have like a appetizer, you could have a side, you could have your main course, like adjust which one is which based on what you need more of at the given time. I do think, and you know, if he is in that 2 times his body weight or over, you know, range, that he can probably work power exclusively for a while to peak up into the season. You could also work both at the same time. Here's a couple different options. I've had a lot of success with accelerative strength with some of my older athletes and stronger athletes that have been, you know, veterans of the system, so to speak, as a max effort substitute. So that's like 80% of your max where you're trying to move it as fast as possible for only a couple reps. And, you know, work more of that strength, speed, and speed strength on dynamic effort. I'm taking a drink real quick. Excuse me. So, if, you know, he's kind of reached a little bit of a stagnant point, he's never done dynamic effort, but you're concerned about, you know, losing some of that strength, if that's a concern of yours, you could work both at the same time. You could almost perform like a full body day where you're, you know, doing your push, pull, squat, et cetera, and, you know, get your strength work done for those movements on the same day, and then have a separate day for lower body dynamic effort and a separate day for upper body dynamic effort. So you have each to focus on by itself in a small window to put more into them. So that's an option. So I guess if I had to summarize, my advice would be to go to more of a conjugate phase. If it's something you've never done before, I think it's kind of like hard to, you know, go from blocks of one thing to blocks of another because you've never seen how your body's going to react to not doing something. So I think conjugate's always a safe bet in that sense. To the second part of the question about, you know, should he treat the fall as like an off season or in season? I 1000% think that athletes, especially baseball players, you know, jury's still out on a lot of the young players shouldn't even be playing fall ball. They should be developing, but that's besides the point. As a JUCO guy, like I, with my college guys, treat the fall as a time where we're still trying to make gains, right? You know, your spring and summer is compromised already with games. So if we use, say the same thing for the fall, would we leave it ourselves like 3 or 4 months only to get better? It's not going to cut it. We could have 5 or 6 if we use the fall. So I would basically say, and I know he's not in agreement with you on this, but I would say treat the fall as off season, barring any, you know, major competition he has for a roster spot or something of that nature. In my experience, I'd usually have guys peak. So like the last 3 to 4 weeks going into their college fall season would be like a contrast training or like a super dynamic focused 4 weeks to just kind of like get them moving at faster speeds, closer to what, you know, hitting and pitching are like and in baseball in general. And then once the fall's here, it's like more of a, you know, building some strength and maintaining some strength, but also working the dynamic effort side of things, but it's more of a what we would do during the offseason type of thing. I'm not going to kill the guys, so to speak. Like, we can hit the gas a little harder in the true offseason, but we're definitely not treating it as an in-season portion. So I hope that helps. Next question. Dylan Joyner07. He wants to know the best way to incorporate velocity-based training and record data without access to tech, and the best way to use some tech with a limited budget. So some of my tech recommendations, you know, if a budget is limited, so to speak. So first things foremost, and I can find somewhere to drop this Perlipin's chart. Basically, if you don't know what it is, it's a chart that just gives you an estimate of like what a load is in terms of the percentage of someone's one rep max based on the number of reps they were able to do. So, you know, if you want to, you know, if you had guys in a conjugate split, right, where they were going more of a max effort, 1 to 5 rep, or strength hypertrophy for 8 reps, whatever it is on that day, and then they had a dynamic day and you were doing bar speed work. Week by week, and this is what I'm going to recommend, you can estimate the 1 rep max based on a chart like that to continue to get a ballpark estimate of the best percentage for the dynamic work, right? You know, we're not going to be perfect here. We don't have the machinery to do so. So this is my best way to get close as possible without that. Excuse me. So, you know, if I have that chart and I'm estimating 1 rep maxes every week based on the strength work that my guys are doing, I can accurately reassess numbers to them or reassign numbers to them based on the percentages. So, week one, I did a 5 rep set for strength on my max effort day and I did 185 pounds. And then I did dynamic effort work with 45% of, you know, what I calculated my max to be based on that 185 for five. The next week, if I did 195 for five, I should probably recalculate my max based on that and get a higher number now, which would raise my 45% number, right? That's my advice, for the best, desired effect for that ballpark estimate. Always reassess one rep max based on rep work. Like, I'm reassessing my guys, you know, maxes or estimated maxes, you know, daily and weekly to get them the most effective numbers. So a lot of the time you'll even see if we're on a cycle where like I'm tapering down their dynamic work from like 65 in that strength speed window down to like 55, 50 to 45. Sometimes their 45% could be like just as much as their 50 or 55% was because, you know, I've assessed that their max has gone up a little bit in that amount of time based on some of the rep work we're doing. With that said, some cheaper tech that you could possibly use on a limited budget. Iron Path app is something that I've used before. You know, it's not the most accurate, but if it's being used against itself, meaning like if you measure, an athlete with it in October and use the same exact, measuring tool in November, then, you know, at least it can be compared against itself. So that's a good one that's for free on the iPhone. Or if you want a little bit more of a sophisticated version, I think it's $199, so that's worth it. If you have no money or anything, you can get. And then if you want to spend a little bit of money, Bar Sensei or Gym Aware are two that I've heard great things about and that I know of. There's a great article on Simply Faster. If you just look up, you know, best VBT measuring devices, you'll find a Simply Faster article on Google. I would check that out. The author does a great job of breaking down, you know, what's what and the benefits and drawbacks of each. Driveline has one that I think is coming soon, and Kyle Bode has said a lot of good things about the price point on that. So maybe hold out for that. And then obviously if you have the money later on, you can never go wrong with a Tendo. It's like the best one you could, Tendo units, the best you could possibly use and most accurate. I would suggest that if you eventually have the money for sure. So I guess that's my best bet for you in terms of, getting, buy without the budget at first. All right. We're doing great here. We're, 37 minutes in. I've done 5 questions. It's not bad. All right. Question 6. Richard Beltran at Richard T. Beltran. I said Beltran. I feel bad. Beltran, I would assume. Thoughts? Although we did have Carlos Beltran. Or Beltran. I guess it depends who says it. I don't know. Beltran for the sake of argument here. All right. Thoughts on getting different certifications, CSCS, TPI, on-base, USAW, things of that nature. So the CSCS and the USAW are standard, if you don't know, top of the line, cream of the crop in terms of, strength and conditioning coach, certifications, and the TPI and on-base U. I know TPI is, originated in the golf world, I hope I'm not misspeaking, but, a lot of good stuff on general movement and, learning about, what is needed for rotational athletes and things of that nature. And then on base U, it works in the same vein, so to speak, from what I've heard. And I've heard nothing but good things about it. Just in the sense that, it's teaching about the, proper, teaching points of movement and movement quality and assessment in terms of assessing, your rotational athletes and things of that nature. Heard nothing but good things about those. So he's on the right track with, the certs that he's naming. However, I will say this. In this industry, the Indian is more important than the arrow. Think of the arrow as a certification, but the, person wielding it, I hate to use this cliched semi-racist example, but it's a good analogy. We can just, say the colonial soldier holding the rifle. That makes people feel better. But not so much the ammunition, but the person using it, right? I don't like when people get super concerned with just getting a bunch of certifications, just kind of trying to get as many as possible to fill the wall up with as many and look as good as you can. Just not important. What's important is what you know and how you can apply it. Once you get a, certification to be nationally certified and just for insurance purposes, at that point, certification should be more so for, what you can learn from them and what you can use from them to make you a better coach. But don't look at them as feathers in your cap, for sure. I disagree with that outlook. If you do need something, for sure, I think the CSCS is the best bet for national recognition and you know, if you want to get in the field of strength conditioning jobs in a school level, I think that's a must, CSCS. If you're private sector, it's more what you know, not what you have. So, like, we're only going to really need a cert for insurance. I don't think I've ever, in the time that I've started, told someone what my certs were. I used to, you know, be really corny and have them listed on my business card, but it's so irrelevant. People care what you know and the results you've gotten for others, and it's a, you know, word of mouth business, so that's the most important thing. Don't worry about that. But if you're looking to get into the school level, it's a great one to get. And if you need one and you don't have any whatsoever, and even if you're in the private sector, it's probably your best bet, because you're going to learn the most from it if you take it seriously. So CSCS for sure. If you're looking for something that you already have a nationally recognized one, but you just want to do a cert to actually learn a lot, have a hands-on practical two-day, you know, weekend and a lot of learning materials, the CPPS, and I'm not just saying this because I have it, but the CPPS, Certified Physical Preparation Specialist, run by Joe DeFranco and Jim Smith. They're just so much to learn from. I had it 3 years. I got it 3 years ago. My head trainer, Julian, has been with me for a year now that I brought in with me. He just got it a couple months ago. They just do an amazing job. Shout out to those guys. As a CPPS alum, I'm very proud to, you know, raise that banner and tout that, sir, because it's just amazing. So highly recommend that if you want to learn all about the breathing essentials, the way the, you know, to assess clients and athletes, the sports performance side of things with, like, the, you know, big three, deadlift, bench, and squat, and just all that kind of stuff. It's just awesome, and you learn so much, and the test is very rigorous, and you're going to just learn a lot coming out of that. Same thing goes for the TPI and On-Base U. Like, awesome learning resources, but use them to actually learn and not just to have them to put letters after your name. So you look like a human alphabet. You know, actually use them to get something out of them. If you get them to learn and get better, they're never a waste. They're obviously going to cost you some money, but if you're getting better with them, then they're great. Be careful of being a quote unquote cert getter and not an applier or someone who actually puts things to action. So that's my advice on that. Question 7, Brent Rouse. Best med balls to get, and then the second part of the question was best lifts for young baseball players. All right, so basically, Brent's question had to deal with, you know, he has a young son, and he wants to get a medicine ball and only wants to get one, you know, in terms of, you know, budgeting and things of that nature. If he had to get one, what was his best bet? In my mind, the best bet would be to get a lighter one, and the reason for that is you can use it for more speed, strength, slash dynamic, slash ballistic use, so overhead throws for lower body extension, rotational throws for the baseball players, things of that nature, to go with strength work. And I've said this before, like, pairing more dynamic effort activity with the strength stuff for the younger guys is huge. I think it's good to teach them how to use their body and load it rapidly, and then also build strength through movement patterns. So, you know, if you want to really get something that'll cover the other side of the spectrum for yourself, then I think a lighter one's your best bet. Young players need to learn how to move fast, and baseball is a sport where pitching and hitting are fast speed, power-oriented ballistic movements. So I would advise getting a lighter ball. When I say lighter, maybe, you know, anywhere from 4 to 8 pounds, something that he can really, as he's younger, or even maybe 4 to 6 and not 8 if he's, you know, really young, because you want to be able to get them to actually, like, be really, you know, able to move it well, and then go from there as he gets older. In terms of best lifts for young baseball players, above all else, keep it simple. Whether it's baseball, soccer, basketball, football, if it's a young athlete just starting out, like, they're not going to need much more than just proficiency and progressively loading the main movement patterns. So your pushes, your pulls, your squats, your single leg variations, your hinges, and then, you know, core stability as well. Throw that in there, and sprinting and jumping, right? So it's very simple. And I've tweeted this before, but, like, get them sprinting, get them jumping, and then just develop clean movement and effective movement in the movement patterns, and then progressively load them. And for the first year or two, if that's all you do, they're going to get so much out of that, and you're going to see a lot of improvement and some big differences for them. So really key, just keep it simple and go from there. All right, so we have now moved towards the last question of our 8-question odyssey on this Q&A episode. I feel like I've talked nonstop for 3 hours, yet here we are at only 45 minutes. I hope it's, you know, felt not that way for you guys. And I think I just feel this way because my mouth is dry, but whatever. Question 8, Fletch Zornes. Let's see, does he have a handle. Just Fletch Zornes. The last three guys had handles that were just their names. All right, Fletch Zornes. Good resources to, you know, good resources to expand knowledge of baseball specific training. I'm going to preface my answer on this, and I want to say one thing first. If I leave you out of one of the people that I need, some of the people that I named for my answer to this question, please don't kill me or feel bad or hate me or be mad at me if you listen. I'm sorry. First of all, I named a few that just came off the top of my head, and I stopped at like four or five, whatever it is. And I may think of some more as I go to answer this, so bear with me on that. So, good resources to expand knowledge of baseball-specific training. In my opinion, in today's day and age, like, you are absolutely nuts if Twitter isn't your number one source for, you know, what you are trying to learn as an athlete, coach, or parent. You know, when it comes to either strength training, baseball specific training, or any sport in general, just Twitter alone, and let's look for some names. And a key here is to make sure that you're finding the right person and just be careful who you listen to, because if you find the right people, that it's a free resource to learn a lot of stuff, but you have to make sure you're not being misled by the wrong person who's not so knowledgeable. In my opinion, Kyle Rogers from Driveline Strength, lead strength trainer, phenomenal resource. Shout out Kyle, muscles and management alum who I, as I mentioned before, hopefully we'll get on with the rest of the guys over at Baseball Health Professionals. And that's a good segue to Steven Oster out of Canada. He's another guy that's just doing some amazing stuff. I love what he does. He's a good source. DJ Edwards, I want to say I think it's Push Performance in Colorado. Shout out to him. He's doing some awesome stuff, and you should be following these guys if you don't already. I'm not going to be the corny goofball and say myself, because if you listen to this, you already, you know, follow me. Ben Brewster, Tread Athletics, another great guy. Let's see, who else do we got? I love the Elon Sports Performance account. I believe that's run by a guy named Nick DeMarco. I'm not positive, so I hope I got that right. He's another good one. Alan Bishop, head strength coach for Houston men's basketball. It's fantastic. And I can go on and on here. I guess the point that I'm trying to, and if you want to get into more of like, the baseball end of things, this was a baseball specific question, so I was naming some baseball guys at first. Jason Ockhart, not as much anymore now that he has the job with the Phillies, but he's a great conduit of information. Let's see, on the hitting end, let's go. If I have pitching on the top of my mind, I might do some pitching. Oh, Craig Hyatt, just tons. I mean, oh shit, Pitching Ninja, of course. I think I didn't even say because it's so obvious at this point. Pitching Ninja, Craig Hyatt, just, you know, seeing how guys move, they're putting a lot of gifts up of, you know, hitters and pitchers at the major league level and high level college guys and things of that nature. Follow them and follow a lot of the accounts that you see them retweeting, because they're just a wealth of information. And I think my best advice would be to just follow the best hitting and pitching coaches on Twitter and Instagram and learn from, you know, what they're doing and listen to them and learn about what makes hitting and pitching tick and what makes movements in those two different areas quality, and just learn as much as you can about those movements, because then you can apply them to whether you're doing strength training. Like, I've learned a lot about baseball, about hitting and pitching mechanics from just the guys that I've connected with on here, and I've been able to make my strength training better because of that. So that's my biggest advice with that, is to just, you know, follow the best resources, whether it's strength training, speed training, or just hitting and pitching, and just, you know, be up to date on what they're posting, interact with them, use what they're saying, and just try everything out and get the best feel that you can. So with that being said, that brings us to the close of these 8 questions. I think that's a great episode and something that I would love to do maybe once every 6 weeks, every 2 months or so. I think it's a great way to, you know, answer questions and you know, increase engagement with my followers. So this is going to be something I think I'm definitely going to be doing for more, you know, more into the future. If you have any feedback on this episode, if I was, you know, answered one of your questions and you haven't left me, you know, a review or a rating, please do so. I'd appreciate it. One thing that I wanted to talk about that I thought was pretty cool. My last episode with Erica Suter, I posted on my, my host source for the podcast, and I published it at like 4 a.m. when I woke up to go to the bathroom one night. Sorry if it's TMI. Anyway, before I even published it, or I'm sorry, before I even tweeted it out, put it on Instagram, whatever, I had like 60 or 70 downloads, which to me was so cool, because it means that many people just subscribed to it and just got the notification right away and listened to it as soon as I posted it. So shout out to whoever those people are. I think that's freaking amazing. excuse me, amazing. Even having 1, 5, or 10 of them, I think is great. And the fact that I probably have like 100 is crazy to me. So without further ado, I'm going to sign off here. I want to thank you guys again for all the questions. If there's anything else, any other questions you may have or things you'd like to know, as always, I am here. Shoot me a question, because even if I don't answer it today, you never know when I'm going to do another Q&A episode, such as the one that we just finished. So with that being said, I said that 47 times. I think it's like my most favorite way to transition. But, you know, thank you guys for listening as always. Look forward to next week's episode with some of the big guests that I outlined. And I hope you guys have enjoyed this one. Peace.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Muscles and Management, brought to you by Challenger Strength. Tune in next week for the newest installment of the show that is changing how we view training, sports performance, and business.